Welcome to Attack of Opportunity.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Attack of Opportunity. I have the distinct pleasure on the eve of Canadian Thanksgiving to speak with we have to thank the Americans for, like, you know, hijacking and giving us the holiday. And I can't think of anything more to thank my American audience out there by talking to this lovely South African gent who's living in Japan right now and about to move to Britain. I mean, that's just Thanksgiving to me. Please welcome, I am a big fan of this man, Guy Skalanders. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, you know, it's with the 13 hours of the future that you are in, it's taken some doing. And so nervous I am with the tech right now. I am literally looking at something that, of course, just doesn't look right to me. I'm like, please don't make me have to start this all over again. But assuming everything's okay, while I quietly check things in the background, the first question that we always love to ask our victims on here on Attack of Opportunity is, Mr. Skalanders, can I call you Guy?
Sure.
How did you first know that you were a geek, a nerd, one of us?
Huh. I guess that would have to be 1984. So that was when I was a wee youngling. And I grew up in a household where kids were not allowed to interrupt parents and adults and things. But I was watching television, and my favorite television show came on. Or at least I thought it was coming on. So I risked the wrath of the parents to rush into the living room or whatever it was and demand that my mother come and record the show, because I didn't know how to record. This was on VHS days. And interrupted everything. She came rushing through, loyal mother as she was, and it was an advertisement for the show. It wasn't the actual show, but I recorded the advertisement anyway, because that was close enough for me. And I think that sort of solidified in me that I was going to dedicate my life to making sure that the fantasy and craziness was the priority in my life. And of course, that show was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
That's awesome. One of our cast members, Frank Hamilton, his wife bought him a shirt, and it's got Skeletor on it, and it says "Shuck my bone, He-Man," and he's wearing this like literally last night. That's sorry, that just struck a bone with me. Please continue.
No, absolutely. And when you look at He-Man and the Master of the Universe, you watch it now, it hasn't aged well at all, but it was the foundation of storytelling, with the big bad guy who was very clearly evil and the superhero or the hero who was very good, and there was always a moral value at the end of it. And that really resonated. I still have all of the shows I used to have them on DVD, and I've got them on hard drive, but every now and again, and I'm hitting a bit of a block, or I just kind of want to get teleported back to being that innocent five-year-old kind of watching in awe.
There's a way. Have you seen the new She-Ra they released on Netflix? Something. I'm sorry. Like, the wife and I watched it on a lark, because, like yourself, we, you know, we're from the 80s kids. We remember, you know, He-Man. We watched all that stuff, and we're watching this, and it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's something. It, you know, dots all the I's, crosses all the T's. It's campy as hell. And yet, like, we burned through the first season and went, wow, second season, eh. But it's definitely, like, if you're a fan of the original, you got to watch the new stuff, even just to love to hate. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway, sorry, I cut you off there, but again, that's kind of the show. You people remind me of stories and Attack. So, what else you got on DVD? I got to ask now. Like, I just got to ask. What else have you got going on DVD from the old days?
Well, I used to collect DVDs. I actually had DVDs before I had a DVD player. That's how crazy my collection fanaticism was. But my excuse was that I used to lecture film and television. So it was justifiable to go and buy 20 or 30 DVDs and sort of just sit on them. I realized at one point that I had a problem when I had bought my third copy of the same film and discovered the second DVD was still in its wrapping. I was like, okay, now I have to stop, because I had well over 1,000 DVDs at one stage. But I have to say that the ones that brought me the most joy must have been the Star Trek series, and they had a hard clam case with 8 or 9 discs in it, one season per box set. And they looked really good, and of course they contained Star Trek, which for me is the ultimate. So, yeah, mm-hmm. That was DVDs, and collecting DVDs of course was quite tricky in the older days, where you had zoning, so you could buy DVDs from the US, but they wouldn't play on a South African DVD player, or you bought them from Australia and they wouldn't play on a South African DVD player or an American DVD player because everyone was zoned. So I used to have multiple DVD players from different countries so I could watch my different discs, because
I think that kind of pushed people into bootlegging. You know what I mean? Like, even the zoning, that was just one more push for people to bootleg. Not that copying and ripping, I don't know anything about that. No. Star Trek, you say? I remember Voyager, the premiere. A buddy invited a bunch of us and, like, lined up chairs in his living room, and we all dressed fancy and sat there for the premiere of Voyager, because, you know, I'm excited about the new Picard series, got to say.
Cannot wait. It's I'm so nervous for it. I am so nervous for it. So yes, it's gonna be interesting. I was talking to friends about it the other day, and I was saying Star Trek Discovery, although it's incredibly entertaining, doesn't have the Star Trek feel to it.
Yeah.
Which I don't have a problem with. I mean, it's a new direction that they're wanting to go in, so that's fine. But I think Picard needs to have some of the old school feel whilst having the modern day uptake. Because if you look at Orville feels like a Star Trek series just produced in the modern day period.
Love that show. Absolutely love that show. So, the wife and I watch that all the time.
So what I like is it proves that the formula is still viable. So I hope Picard follows along those lines, where they go, okay, cool, we're going to have the high production quality of Discovery, but with a more robust Star Trekian narrative, if I can put it like that.
I follow you. Like, I saw the trailer, the extended trailer, and I, you know, the city scenes are somewhere between Blade Runner and The Wrath of Khan. Their city set up picture back to the, you know, to the movie era of the 80s, and the open fields and stuff, all those special Picard, the Star Trek movies that Picard himself was in. You know, they touch on a lot of his home life in the vineyards and stuff, and they're wrapping a whole bunch. They're taking 7 of 9 from Voyager, and they're putting her in the series, and all, you know, wife's very excited about that. You know, awesome girls that kick butt, always gets the wife. Yeah. Antagonism there.
Absolutely.
But you know what? We're geeking out a bit here, and I'm going to go back into script here, because the fans want to learn. Well, obviously they know we're both Star Trek fans now. But how about this? Would you say that this DVD collection, the sci-fi and everything that you were compiling preciously, would you call that your gateway drug? I always ask, you know, was there a video game, cosplay, card game, something that was more mainstream that was the gateway drug into the tabletop RPG? Would you say your love of sci-fi and movies and that, you know, the genre is what kind of locked you in?
I think so. And I think also I got to the age of about 10 years old, and I think I just decided that that was the right age for me, and I've just stayed there. So when I think back on my childhood, in school and that sort of thing, I can always remember in the playground, others would be playing touch football or you know, sporting stuff. Mm-hmm. And my friends and I, we would be either recreating He-Man and the Master of the Universe, or another show, Dino Riders, which was awesome, or Thundercats. You know, these are all cartoons of the 80s that were super fantastical. And we would recreate those. We'd run around pretending to be, oh, I'm Skeletor, I'm He-Man, and that sort of thing. And in essence, it was almost a forerunner of LARPing to a degree. We didn't have rules and things like that. We didn't care. But yes, I think that was definitely it. When I moved from my hometown to a new school, I didn't have those friends with me. But it was at that point that I discovered other friends who were already into role-playing. And that was an easy transition for me to go from running around a schoolyard pretending to be Skeletor to sitting around a desk pretending to be Skeletor. It wasn't a difficult transition at all.
You mentioned your hometown. So, yeah. Your hometown proud? Can we give a shout out to...
I really wish I could, but I don't know if it's still there or not. It was a very small little farming community, and there was a major highway construction. And back in my day, back in the old days, it was a stopping point. You would stop in the little village and buy refreshments and that sort of thing, and then you would carry on your journey because it was between two major cities.
Gotcha.
With the advent, though, of the petrol stations or gas stations starting to become more like food complexes, so they're almost like shopping malls on the side of the highway type of thing. Mm. They put one out just outside of the little village, and then no one went into the village anymore. So the school that I attended, for example, it had been running for 110 years when I was there. It has subsequently closed because there weren't enough people in attendance. They were now going off to the big cities and that sort of thing. So, yeah, sadly, I have fond memories of the town.
Sorry to dig up this. And they cut the artery off with the 7-Eleven gas station, and my town dried up and died. Thanks for asking. Okay, moving on. How long? Look, we're approximately the same age. You know, we love the 80s cartoons. I was also a big fan of the original X-Men cartoon because those people got into X-Men through the comics, and I got into it actually through the television cartoon. How long have you been a gamer? Since you were 10, obviously, but how long are we talking?
In terms of role playing, I started that when I was in the equivalency of your grade five. It's grade five, grade six, somewhere around there. So that was 1988, 89, somewhere around there. So a very long time.
Okay. And I was in high school in the late 80s. It's getting older by the minute. So a typical I got to admit, one of the things I brought up about hometown is something that bugs me is a lot of people assume that I'm just from the northern border of America. Like he's just an asshole from Michigan. It's like, no, I'm Canadian, actually. Listen to the story and things are about. And they go, oh, yeah, type of thing. When I first met you, I thought you were British. Now, I know you have dual citizenship, but you're actually from South Africa. And correct. I felt so bad because I really don't like it when people just assume that just because I'm really loud and animated, that I must be an American. And no, actually, I'm just, you know, I am a dick, but I'm from Canada. So I was trying to tie that in, you know, talking about in the beginning, just for an identity thing. Now, lately, I've been getting some flack because these kinds of questions, like how long have you been gaming and type of thing, are loaded questions now. Because apparently it doesn't matter if you've been gaming for 30 years or three. Well, sure, it doesn't matter. It's not an experience thing like a badge or no. It's an interesting question. And a lot of listeners are like, oh, cool. How long has he been doing this? You know, what led you from the playground to Skeletor to, you know, that kind of thing. It's a journey kind of question, people. It's not a qualification portfolio kind of question.
Absolutely.
Just to clear that.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you. Now, speaking of being qualified, the loaded question that everybody loves to hear is, you know, like there's so many people playing TTRPGs now, tabletop role playing, all this stuff. It's pushed into the mainstream. But there are, compared to the consumer, you know, the provider, the content creator, what made you decide to start making your own content, to become a content creator on the web? When did that happen and why?
Wow. That's an interesting one, I think. I'm just trying to follow my own journey in my head now. I became a GM because I didn't want to work out THACO for second edition. And as the GM, I didn't have to worry. I could just say it hits or it misses. Whereas as a player, you had to work out THACO. And that was...
You might want to take a minute to explain what THACO means. I know what it means, but...
Oh, goodness, yes. It was an inverted mathematical equation that second edition had where... I still don't get it to this day.
It means two hit armor class of zero. THACO. That's exactly
there you
what
go. You see, I didn't even know that. So
oh, yeah.
It was just this advanced math thing I went, no.
Two sliding charts. They had like the armor class of zero and they go 1, 2, 3, 4 this way and -1, 2, 3, 4 this way. And then they would have numbers on top that you'd slide because of your level. And it's like, you need this to hit this. And the zero, the AC zero was the focal point. You know,
that's
so
right.
People that could get armor classes in the negatives would be like these days, the low level characters that go, I have an AC of 21 and higher. People go, really? Okay, Mr. Tower Shield. That's the, you know, the mentality. Anyway, I am so happy I got to teach the great GM something because I'm old. That's great. I love it. Sorry, getting back to deciding to make content because you were lazy and didn't want to do THACO. Go on.
Yeah, basically. I was sucked at math anyway. You know, and it was like, it's too much. But even in those early days of second edition, because that was the one that I was introduced to. Although we started with the red box, but it was more of a casual thing than anything else. D&D second edition was the main thing. We started to make content already. My group of friends and I, we made a Wild West conversion. We made a sailing ship conversion. We made a Star Trek conversion. We did a Star Wars conversion. You know, we were just basically trying to take the D20 system and mold it to whatever we wanted to. But we were always active in terms of telling stories, and I was always running the games and that sort of thing. And I think that what that did was it got me to the point where I was just very comfortable running games. And so when I then moved to our major city and started to compete, we had competitive game mastering or dungeon mastering at that stage at the convention that was run. For me, it was just a no-brainer. I was just running the games as I normally did. And somehow or other, it was doing the right thing. And so I started to win those competitions on a regular basis. As an unknown, which surprised a lot of people, because I was a country boy who'd come in and was you know, sweeping the deck. So it happened for a couple of years, and then eventually one year I was signing up to attend one of these conventions, and there was this young GM who, the moment they saw me, they said, "Oh no, are you going to be competing as a GM?" And I said, "Well, yes." And he's like, "Okay, well then I'm not going to enter because there's no point because you're going to win." And I said, "Well, that's not true. You might be able to. I mean, who says that you're not better than I am?" And he's like, no, you're definitely better." And that got me immediately. I pulled out of the competition and said, "Right, this is ridiculous. Anyone can tell a good story. Anyone can run a game. What sets what I do apart from somebody else? I don't really know, because for me, it was never a conscious effort. It was just practice every week, twice a week type of thing. So let me try and codify this. Let me try and work out a way that I can help other people to possibly have a better game, or to realize what they're doing is right and maybe hone or improve, or even to watch and go, no, that's completely wrong. But maybe being aware of what's completely wrong now allows me to do something better. So that's what started it, quite literally was that.
I have never heard of a GM competition. I like nowadays, obviously, it's like, you know, go. Who cares about the rules? You know, just go tell your story, have your fun with your friends. You know, they talk about the Matt Mercer effect. It's like, get over it. You're not going to be him, that kind of thing. But a competition. But again, this is back in the day, you know, when it was when D&D was a guarded thing. And but I'm glad you kind of pulled up. I'm really glad to hear you pulled above that. And now you're putting up all this great content for us to absorb. For someone like myself, who also has been GMing as long as you have and still have yet to get it right, there's a confidence in watching you, Cody, Michael Kasevin, all these guys, all different styles and all tips and tricks. I recently met Nicole Tuttle, brand new at DMing, wonderful girl, and she put stuff right on Twitter. Right. And I was talking to her, and we interviewed her, and she was very nervous to work with me just because, like I said, I had 30 years on my belt. I said, I never said I was any good at this. I just liked doing it. But I said to her, truth is truth. If you get, because she said, oh, people, you know, text me and spam me stuff and give me these hints that I put up like they're my own, but I'm just sharing. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, truth is truth. Like, there are good tips to help GMs. It's not a black and white written stone. Page one of your book says, you know, go for it, you know, that type of thing. And I really admire the approach you take, is what I guess what I'm trying to get at. Which gets me to my next question is, I'm very happy to interview people like yourself, Patrick Brennan, Michael Kasevin, and I'm not trying to get into a name dropping list. It's just that if I talk about some of the other people that inspire me, people go, who? And sure, they'll look them up. Troy LaValle, Skid Meyer, you know, there's a bunch of people. They don't just inspire you to get going. They inspire you to keep going when you're doing badly, when chips are down, when things are not working out. And I'm sure your listeners would like to know, was there a specific inspiration for you to actually get started beyond that competition? Or has there been other content creators that you personally find inspiring that keep you going, that got you past the first year when things didn't work out, or the second year when things didn't work out? Actually, I don't think you've had a bad year. I've been watching you for a while. You're doing good, man. But no, seriously, is there someone that you would like to say, you know, inspired you? I always love it when on talk shows they bring the actor in, and like you're talking to Tom Hanks, and he talks about how Jack Lemmon inspired him. You know, like, I love that stuff.
Right.
So now I'm asking you.
Yes. Well, firstly, we didn't start well. Those first few videos that I recorded sat for a long time and didn't do anything until we eventually someone posted about it on Reddit, and then overnight we had 2,500 subscribers, which in those days was phenomenal, and that kind of motivated. But I would be remiss to say that the channel has always been easygoing. There were, especially in the early years, I had a team of people helping me, Derek and Carla, and they were part of the company that we formed to do these YouTube videos. And I can honestly tell you there were many weeks where I said to them, I can't do this anymore. I'm uninspired. I have read negative comments, or videos haven't done well, or, you know, we're pulling the plug. And they supported and convinced me that it was worth going. Then, as we started to meet other people, because I think something that South Africans, we certainly weren't very aware of, is the massive role-playing community that's out there. South Africa was very isolated. And when people say, what systems have you played? I tell them, well, I played Dungeons and Dragons, and then a little bit of a D6 system, and maybe that's it. And they go, oh, but what about this? What about this? We didn't even know about that. We were ordering stuff by mail order catalog. So once I started to get more mainstream and suddenly people started to respond, I've had a wonderful relationship grow with Dave Fryant from Nerdarchy. And he and I get together on a regular basis just to talk about life and to discuss stuff. And, we try out different techniques, or we try out different things, or it's like, I want to try something different. And so then we help each other out. And I have to say that is a relationship that I truly value. On that side of things, there's another gentleman who tried to get me to commit crime in the USA, which I'm very grateful for. He was encouraging me to steal a scooter to streak down the road of Indianapolis. A very fine gentleman by the name of Seth Skorkowski. He and I had only known each other online. And the first time we meet each other was at Gen Con this year, as a matter of fact, 2019. And he was just one of those people that we just clicked, and we just hung out as much as we could. And it was phenomenal. It was really, 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 really cool.
Did you streak with it? you're really leaving us hanging there. Did Seth win the bet? Did you like, there's a story here that you're just kind of, come on, absolutely, man. Like, how did you go from, I always wanted to beat you? Cause that's my line. I'm up here in Canada. I don't go to cons, and one day I'm going to Ford and I come down, and there's just going to be this Canadian like glomming on everybody going, oh, Michael, oh, guy. And they're like, oh yeah, I worked with you once. Get off. That kind of thing. Get security. That's going to be me. Well, I'm busy hugging everybody at the airport. It's a Canadian thing. I want to know like how you went from the online to like finally like, hey, yeah. And well, yeah, let's, you know, and you get to that in one weekend.
That is, I think, one of the greatest rewards for running a YouTube channel or running any kind of social channel, where you have access to people that you may not normally have access to. And I think the most important thing, and perhaps this is a South African thing, we don't do celebrity. So when big American celebrities come out to South Africa, they don't get thousands and thousands of hordes of people screaming and ready to sacrifice children just to be in their presence. So that is a disarming factor from my perspective. But what I love about the space is that you go, oh, hey, Seth, I watched your YouTube channel. I think you're awesome. I have a YouTube channel. We should talk. And there is this sort of, oh, okay, let's do it. You're not just a weird random stranger. Well, you are actually a weird random stranger, but you kind of have street cred.
I never thought of that.
So it was great. And like I said, some people, I don't know what it is. There's obviously, there must be a fancy German word for it that we've stolen and put into English, where you just meet someone and you're just instantly friends as if you've been friends for 20 years.
You got it. Like you said, we just clicked is the American.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's North. We used up here, yeah. You know, as well. No, that's great. That's great. Still dodging the actual naked story. So we'll just move on. maybe a bit of follow up.
I'll send you a picture later.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, hell yes. Just, I mean, like I'm a fan of comedians like Fluffy and Russell Peters, and he tells those kinds of stories. Like, I'll tell you, I met a guy, and then, you know, next thing we know, we're streaking in LA. So we talked about the early years. Where does the magic happen? Like, where is your studio? Do you work online like myself where everyone's all over the place, or do you have a bunch of people around the table? Now, for your solo stuff, like, you know, where does the magic happen? Where do you got going? Like, are you literally at the kitchen table? Could you reach behind the green screen and touch a sink because Japan apartments are so small? Or, you know, where's it all happen?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting cultural story, really. When I moved to Japan, I had a fairly large house in South Africa where we had a whole garden cottage devoted to gaming. It was our gaming room. It had a small kitchen. It had its own bathroom. So it was this space. And then when I started making plans to move to Japan, I said, okay, well, I need an apartment that's of comparable size. And I was told very politely that I'm not rich enough for that sort of thing. and there are very few of those kinds of buildings that you would actually get, you know. So we eventually found a two-bedroom apartment 20 minutes outside of Tokyo. And whenever anyone visits, which in itself is a curiosity here in Japan, but when anyone visits, they always go, wow, it's such a big apartment. And I'm going, yeah, well, if you think so, sure. But yeah, so I've got one room of the apartment is dedicated to the studio. And I think anyone who's trying to get into doing these kind of shows or doing something live and that sort of thing, having a dedicated space is the right way to go. Because if you're constantly having to take things down and put things up and take things down and put things up, that's a barrier to recording. So when you're having a bad day or a bad week and you're going, oh, I don't feel like recording, if you have to set up everything as well, it's just another excuse. And I'm saying that from experience because I used to do that. But once I set up a dedicated space, it's like, okay, when I'm in here, I'm here to work. I'm here to write or create maps or whatever is needed.
No. So, and I see you're saying, because like beyond that door, past the door that's closed, you need to have the kids, the dogs, the, you know, they got to be out there, because if they're within the airspace, then, you know, you get a bunch of corrupt audio, and sometimes it can't be helped, you know. It's nothing down to people that put a Yeti in the middle of the table and they're just having a good time. Nothing wrong with that. No. But like you said, like, good advice if you're serious about your own content, you know, dedicated space, you know, get that stuff on the other side of the door. And like you said, you come home from a day, well, I was working on a late Saturday night, you know, and you're like, are we doing this? I'm like, yeah, come home. Hi, here we go. You know, got to have it. How long have you been creating this content to get where you are? Now, this is not a form of saying, he said 6 years, then I will be this big in 6 years. No.
It definitely isn't. I want to say that we've been going now for about 4.5 years. Somewhere in that space. And I know it sounds weird. It's like, well, why so vague? Don't you have a distinct birthday or a launch day or something like that? And like I said, the first two that we did, no one watched them. They were just obscure videos. And then they got picked up on Reddit and Sword. So whenever I go to conventions and we're talking about, you know, starting podcasts and YouTube channels and that sort of thing, people say, well, what was the magic that you had? And the bottom line was the magic was being discovered through a Reddit post and then releasing a video a week, every week, regardless of what was going on in one's personal life. And, you know, when I look at what has happened in my personal life over the course of those 4 years, I've shut up my entire existence in one country and reformed it in another, and I'm going to do it again in January. You know, so there's all the stuff going on in the background, and the thought is never, oh gosh, I've got to do all of this stuff. It's a case of, now, will I have enough videos to cover the period whilst I'm busy changing countries or whilst I'm doing this or that? So, yeah, it's It's been a long time.
It's a lifestyle, man. I've been in this three years, and it took us a year just to put up content because we were like, we rehearse 6 weeks, you know, Xbox headsets and a snowball. Oh, yeah, we got this. You know, 6 weeks in, everything goes to hell. And now I'm telling the story because you are a part of it. I formed Rollmongers not as a network, but as a single podcast to launch Pathfinder's Mummy's Mask, which I think is cursed because I went through six friends that abandoned me in the beginning. And then 50 people online in a year and put it down. Rogue One came out. Well, like, oh, well, there's Star Wars. Had a great time doing Star Wars. Bunch of shit audio learned. Okay. Finally get better mics, audio. Do our biggest show like Dice for Dishonor, which is War for the Crowns, all the Cavalier Party and everything. Thanks, Troy. Awesome challenge. And I baked on it. And on and on. And just more and more and more. Now we're at like 7-8 shows. And we're still waiting for that one to really take off. But even if it does, it's like, well, are we going to devote all our time to it? Well, no, like we love doing this and it's a lifestyle choice. I don't golf anymore. The beer budget, you know, like there's time and money. You really got to love being in front of the mic and the camera and the excitement of any hits, one or thousand or none. Or I'll watch this other guy's video. Maybe I should change this. Maybe I'm doing my own. Like all the it's in your head. Bum, 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 bum. Like you said, whether you're even going to change the country, move somebody. And I hate to say it. Weddings, funerals, all these things, you just kind of like, yeah, I could. And then you either got to do a flip and I'll just shoot Thursday instead of Friday. No one will know, but you know, because life happens on the weekend and that's usually that's the gamer time. Magic time is Friday night, maybe Saturday, Sunday, and you're locked into this stuff and then life happens. And luckily I find the gaming community very understanding about that kind of thing. But the internet, like the technical aspect of the internet is not forgiving. You missed a show. The algorithm forgets you. You know, boom, boom, boom. What am I getting at? Sorry. I'm getting at a question here because we picked up Mummy's Mask several times and we even gave it a shot with yourself. And I tried to jump from the podcasting field, which I had a handle on, into the live stream and recording video field, which I wasn't ready for. I just got so excited. And it wasn't you guys that pulled the plug, thankfully. I pulled the plug myself. I just had to admit, take my hat off and say, sorry, guys, you know, I'm not ready for this and I don't want to waste your valuable time. And now looking back, I'm happy I did because I don't want to think that I held you or Mike, any of those guys back from doing some of the great stuff that you do now in that time slot. You know what I mean? Now I'm ready.
Absolutely.
Now I'm ready. You know, but it took another year or two of, you know, and we're just getting into these things. All my podcasts are now becoming vodcasts. You got to go at your own pace. So when I ask you, you know, how long you've been doing it, you say 4 years. Again, people are doing the math. Go, okay, let's say a year of crap, 2 years to get going, 3 years he's discovered, and now he's big in four. No. Please tell me what I think. No. I assume is already right, that you got to go at your own pace. You got to tackle what you're ready for. You still got to push yourself and maybe kind of go, okay, I'm not ready for that. You know, push yourself, you know, push. It's a lot of work, but my motto is I am exhausted, but I am having the time of my life. And even if I stay in that, in the low pool where we're kind of working with someone like yourself, watching, you know, that rise, you know, hoping for that hug at the con, it makes it worth it.
The word I use is it's your child, and takes up as much time as you have. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I was part of another group called Sable Dice, which was fantastic. That was with a big bunch of guys, XP level 3 and taking 20 and Nerda and people like that. That was a lot of fun. And then we started to do the D&D show. And I said to them, guys, I can't carry on. We're just doing too much. There's too much going on. And it's a horrid place to be in where you're going, well, I have to choose now between this one or that one, but you do have to choose because you only have so much time in the day to run around and do things. So, and it's funny, we tried to cut back. At one point we were doing 5 videos a week and we're like, okay, that's too many. Let's cut back. So we cut back to 3 and now we're back up to 5 because it's like, oh, but we need to release this because people, you know, this is something that people are asking for. So it's here now. Let's release it out. And, you know, I was at Gen Con to raise interest from publishers in a new series, which we're launching tonight, as a matter of fact. And at the time, it was great. We were, you know, it was fun and we got lots of interest and that sort of thing. And we put the whole thing together. And I think it's a very interesting new show. It's not a new take on anything. It's just a lot of different takes on the same thing. And we put that together and we're going, okay, now we have to do the next month's one. Okay, we'll try and squeeze that in between the this and the that and the next thing. And I laugh when you say weddings, because my business partner, anyone who knows my channel will know him as the Web Goblin. He is getting married in the second week of November. And I'm flying back to Africa to attend the wedding. Mm. And the other day, I suddenly realized, because being in Tokyo, there's a huge time zone craziness that happens. I sent him a text message saying, dude, I can't come to your wedding. I'm running a live show at the time of your vows. And unfortunately, I think the live show is more important to me than your vows.
your business partner.
This is my business partner.
The guy that's been with you X amount of years, the silent guy that...
Yes.
Okay.
And his response was, oh, that sucks, but I agree with you.
totally.
How do we fix this?
Well, you get him in the chat. You're live streaming, because you know this is the technical age, right? There's him, her, you, and you're like, we did it, you know. And then you just like shout out to the world, you know, they're getting married now. Hire, and then he'll show the audience that you and all your fans are acknowledged, and it's done. It's a done deal.
That's it. He'll have the biggest wedding in the,
yeah. In the, oh yeah. Yeah. When I stream, if my guy's late, I call him. What do? You're live now. And shoved it. I did it to Messina, though. I just shoved him in the phone. People are like, what's he doing? I'm doing what's never been done. Why not? You know,
Why not?
He's driving home from his 10-hour day. You know, he'll be here in an hour. But right now, what did your guy do? Okay, that's what he did. All right, you'll do that for an hour because you got a long drive. Okay, and, you know, why not? Like, you know.
That's it.
You can have a big screen. Put a big screen with a guy on it, a Skype call. I'm telling you, I've seen people do stuff like this. If you can have underwater scuba weddings in the 80s and skydiving weddings in the 90s, why can't we have a 2020 wedding where, you know, some of the attendees are virtual instead of actually there? No, you should really talk about this. I'm telling you. Anyway, you've set yourself perfectly up for my next question. How many, because we're going to talk, you're hinting at the new one, but we'll get to that. How many different shows do you have?
Okay, I always have to count through this. So we've got the GM Advice show, which comes out on Tuesdays. We've got the Campaign Creator Series, which comes out on Thursdays. Then there's Descent into Avernus, which is the D&D Twitch show, and that's on Saturdays. Then there's a live show that I do on Tuesday mornings, which is Monday nights for the American audiences. And now we've got the new one coming out, which is called Game Masters Play. And that's a weekly show which will come out on Sundays. So five shows a week at the moment.
Then there's former projects. Like there's the Airship with you and Michael. There's your old projects. Now you mentioned Carla, and we're talking about Carla, the GM from Dum Dum Die, the all ladies cast, South African. Shout out to Carla. Yes. Because if it wasn't for Carla, who introduced me to Michael Kasevin, our lovely Malaysian Aussie, Dead Aussie Gamer, who introduced me to you, I wouldn't have the pleasure of this interview. And no, it's not one of those Hollywood, it's who you know. Like you said, the community is so welcoming, going, oh, you know, I told you what I know, but you got to talk to this person. Let me get you. And people, you know, hook people up going, oh, yeah, let's keep this conversation going. I just can't be part of it because I'm busy. But, you know, you talk to my guy, you know, and it go and it just everyone leaps forward, you know, together. And that's what I really love about the community. And one of the reasons why I took this show, as small as it still is, from interviewing us, my cast, and some of the audio and creators and stuff that helped, to just reaching out to the podcasting community, big and small, and going, you have an interesting show. Tell me about this and why. You know, you have a big thing. And, you know, what's going on there? So anyway, sorry, getting back to the, I do digress, the matter at hand, conventions. Before we hit you with the, you know, the future project conventions, do you attend them in the States or around North America often, or where, you know, where can we be lucky enough to find you? Because I know you and Michael recently just went to con, you know, and I found out you guys were going way too late to even think about trying to cross the border.
Right.
But
So conventions in the US, the only one I've done so far was this year, which was Gen Con. And it was amazing, I must admit. And I have every intention of going back next year, 2020. We will do a very different, how can I put it? We'll do a very different kind of experience for 2020, Gen Con.
Okay.
But yes, Gen Con is the major one. I'm not sure about the others. There is one very big one. Well, I hope it's going to be very big in October in Philadelphia that I will be going to. And that is NerdarchyCon. That's their first convention that Nerdarchy is putting together. And they've released a trailer now for it. It's if you are a fan of YouTube GMs, it's going to be the convention to go to. I think everybody's going to be there from the Nerdarchy space. I think if you know them.
I was incredibly lucky just to hit Cody Lewis's Facebook and say, I had a cancellation for the show. You know, I know it's full of GMs, big, small. Who wants to be in the show? And this guy, David, said, I'll go. Okay, thanks, David. You know, let's chat, get him in there. And I'm looking at the Santa Claus of all things D&D, and I'm going, holy crap. Hello, Mr. Fry, and it's so good to see you. I don't know the guy from Matt. Because like I said, without that connection, without that new Carla, no Mike, it's yourself, you know, it could be very daunting for someone like myself just to like, boom, I know you. had a great interview with him, as nervous as I was, and found out about the D&D in a Castle series. Now, there's something that's for D&D that I think should be for Pathfinder and some of the other tabletops, and something I would love to eventually, you know, hopefully coming into my own and then give back to the community by trying to do something like that with the Pathfinder GMs and the traveling GMs and that type of thing. Is that something that would interest you? That's something, and I don't mean like a ripoff of what they're doing, but like the concept of world-class DMs going to, and then, you know, pay your $4,000 and off you go. But just the idea that they travel, go to Castle, play in it, you know, to really get your geek on, that's really cool to me. So I guess what my question is like, are you on board because you know David like that? Or let's say if you wanted to put something together, you know, what would you do?
Did in a Castle, I have had a lot of discussions with them this year, possibly about next year, but nothing has been sort of locked down at all. The one advantage I will have over most of the other web-based DMs is that I will be in England already, so they don't have to worry about flying me over from the US. But yeah, I think it's a great idea, and there are events that do pop up. I was talking to DM Scotty from DM's Craft, and he was attending, I think it's coming up soon actually, like a private getaway lodge. It's not a castle, but it's this amazing log cabin somewhere out in Utah, I want to say, in one of the states out that way, where it was a week, I think, of gaming with GMs and tabletop and all kinds of stuff. So I think it happens. This is very, very low key because usually these things can't take a lot of people. But yes, I think it would be brilliant to do something like that. And when I was actually in Minnesota, we were driving somewhere and I was chatting to the guys that I was with. And I was saying, you know, you could buy one of these good old fashioned American barns and convert it into a gaming hall, and then you have tents outside that are made to look like medieval tents, and you've got proper plumbing and all that kind of stuff. But you could have a major week-long gaming event, and that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's like almost like a LARPing event. You ever seen the movie Unicorn City?
Right.
They take it a little too far. There's a place not far from here in the Kawartha. It's called Mount Pleasant. And the highway literally starts doing a Scotland Highland. Like, it's just up the hill and down the hill. And the view is epic. And people have built their little houses with a big deck. And it's hills that lead into the massive forest. Carnivorous Forest is like, now that's where you play D&D. Please, sir, can I rent your house for the weekend with 50 people? We'll all sit on the deck. And just as you're talking, there is your Elven Forest. Like you said, it doesn't have to be so majestic like a castle, whatever. I just had to ask, you know, wanted your thoughts on it. So let's talk about you right now. What social media can we find you on? What outlets? You know, where are you at? We know you're on YouTube. Where else can the fans and listeners find you?
Okay, there are a couple. Twitter is a big community that we've got going, and that's under the handle. I never know what these things are. At How to GM. So that's at How to GM. Our Discord is our biggest active community, I would say, and that's discord.gg/greatGM. We've got about what, five and a half thousand users in Discord now, and there are channels upon channels upon channels of GM advice, story advice, character advice.
Would you mind putting those invites in a link for me, and I could tag them into the video? Sure. And like, if it's an open community, then that would be great.
It is.
I don't see that in my phone. I'd really like to join up on that one.
Yeah,
even me.
No, absolutely, absolutely. So those are the two big ones, and of course YouTube. We do have a Twitch channel, which we broadcast to. Like I said, we do a live show every Monday night US time, and that is just twitch.tv/greatgm. So yeah, and we've got Instagram, and we've got Facebook, but the Twitter and the Discord are our big engagement spaces. We're quite active on those.
Okay, so now it's time to talk about the future. You hinted already about something that's big in the works. You hinted about something that you did in the last convention, and you're going to do something different in the next convention. And I know that we are 15 days out from an awesome Kickstarter. Where do you want to start? Because I want to hear all of it.
The Kickstarter, I think, is a nice, straightforward one, because it's a 5th edition rule set that I wrote. It's edited by a great, great game master, Mike Harris, from Game Master's Vault. And it is as complete a guide as we can create for running ship-based D&D games.
Ooh.
So Ghost of Saltmarsh, which was an official D&D product, was brilliant as a book, as an adventure series, as a how to generate islands and underwater stuff. Their ship combat was very basic in terms of they were limited by the rules that D&D had prescribed for itself. Mm. We took it and said, well, we're independent. We don't care. So we're going to change up some rules to make them work the way that we want them to work. And we started writing this book. It's over 140 pages of rules, and we designed ships for each of the races. So what does an Elvish ship do versus, say, an Orcish ship or a Goblin ship? And so we pushed it quite far. And then I pushed it beyond that to say, okay, well, I want aircraft carriers. I want fantasy aircraft carriers because I have flying creatures. We have Pegasi, we have giant bats, we have a whole bunch of aerial animals. I'm going to put those onto a ship. So now we have these gigantic aircraft carrier like fantasy ships, which launch squadrons of Pegasi or, you know.
Oh, that's cool. Flight above, the barn and stables below.
And that's it. That's it. So, awesome. Yeah. And we then went, okay, well, then we need rules on how to handle squadrons, air squadrons. How do we handle these things? So then we wrote some rules about that. And undead ships. Okay, well, why doesn't every navy just use undead as their crew? Because they don't, you know, there's no. So we had to come up with undead rules. And then how do aquatic ships, because merfolk would build ships, how does aquatic ship combat work versus surface ship combat? So we then looked at real world navies and said, okay, well, we need an equivalent of a depth charge, we need an equivalent of mines, we need an equivalent of these, and so the whole book is really focused on, if you want to play a ship game, not pirates, a ship game, this is how you do it. And we leaned heavily on what had been done in the D&D space. And then we said, okay, cool, that's great, but we want ship combat to be over in 10 rounds. We don't want to spend 3 hours, 4 hours on one ship combat. We want this to be fast and quick and inclusive. So anyway, that's where we are. The book is finished being written. The Kickstarter is just to raise money so we can pay for amazing artwork. So you can see what this aircraft carrier looks like.
Man, I haven't been this excited about ships since Spelljammer first came out, and they have a gravity plane through it, and it's D&D in space, and all this open air, you know, that kind of thing going on. Oh man, so you got me pumped. I want a link for that. So I'm hitting them up for links, not just for you, but for myself. I got to check out what this stuff is. Well, that's one
of the three. Yes.
What else we got? Come on, guy. Oh, yeah. Dig deep, buddy.
Yeah. So the second one is coming out. It's called Game Masters Play. Or GMP, and it is launching on Sunday the 13th of October, so that's my night tonight. Mm-hmm. And what it is we said, okay, we want to approach the publishers that release good RPGs, or they release RPGs, good or bad, doesn't matter, but they're not Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
Simply because Dungeons & Dragons has the marketing budget. They can go out to influencers and they can do their marketing spend and that kind of stuff. So that was what I was doing at Gen Con this year, was I was running around just meeting publishers and trying to hook up with them and get them interested in the project. Every single one that I approached was interested in the project. Bottom line, we get together four or five GMs who have been GMing for 1 year, 20 years, it doesn't matter. We get them together and we give them the rule set. So let's say, for example, this first episode that we're releasing is Adventures in Middle Earth by Cubicle 7. It is a fifth edition skin. They've reskinned fifth edition, but they've added in a whole lot of rules and custom rules and that sort of thing. So we gave them the rule books a month in advance of the recording. They had a month to learn the rules, to look at it from every single aspect. And then we get together, we play a 4-hour session which is recorded of the rule system, where we try and utilize all of the specific rules to the system that make it unique. And then there is a scorecard, and the scorecard has 25 different categories or different areas that have to be answered by each of the participants. And so you get a score from each of the different players as to what they think this role-playing system is worth. And it goes across the board from, are the rules consistent? Are they logical? Do they allow you to tell a good story? All the way through to, is the artwork consistent with the tone of the RPG? We even have a section for, okay, so what's your online support like? Because I think this is an area that publishers are not yet clued into, because we don't see it happening often, is people these days, you might buy a physical copy of the book, but you do not want to have to go and recreate and hand draw your own character template or your own whatevers. That is expected to be online and as a downloadable PDF or as a something. So we even look at, okay, this is a great RPG, but is there any online stuff? Are there training videos? Are there little apps that we can download for managing the weird dice? Are there, you know, all of that kind of stuff is looked into. And then each GM gives a score. Each GM gives a review, a verbal review. And although the shows are sponsored by the publisher, because we said, okay, I'm not going to get five GMs together, make them read rules for a month, and then play a game and give it their endorsement or not, and not pay them. So we pay each of these DMs to take the time and read a rule book. Because let's be honest, a 240-page rule book, you're not going to read in 10 minutes. You got to read it, you got to absorb it, you got to understand it so that you can make valid commentary. And one of the things that we told the publishers was, we said, these are going to be, although we're going to edit the answers together, we will not censor anyone. So if there's a GM who says, I hate this system, that's going in the video. This is not a marketing pitch for you guys. This is a genuine game masters are playing your game, and this is their opinion on it. So in this first one, I'm not going to give away what the final score is, but we had some GMs going, I wouldn't play this system.
How many GMs have you got doing this?
This is our first one. It's a trial. All of the publishers are going, well, before we give you money, we want to see what people think about it. We want to do that as well. We also said to the publishers, hey, listen, if we release this and nobody watches it, we're not going to carry on doing it, because our goal is to help people play games better and to have more enjoyment in their games. If they're not watching the video, it means that they're not finding any value in them. So this one we have got, let me see, we had Dave Fryant, Michael Kesevin, Janet, Freddie, and Mark. So we had five GMs plus myself. So there's six of us in this particular show. So there's six DMs who are giving their input into what we thought about this system. And we unpack it from the DM's perspective. We unpack it from the player's perspective. And then we do a full review. So players can watch the video going, oh, okay, so I can play a really cool ranger, or I can play a hobbit, or I can play a dwarf. And these are what makes it different from the other role-playing systems that are out there. So from my perspective, it's four episodes per RPG that we review, which is a pretty comprehensive overview. We're not explaining in minutia how the rules work. That's not the point. The point is to say, okay, well, in overview, this is what the game's about. So if you're going to buy this RPG, you're going to spend your $50 or $60 buying the book, this is what you can expect out of it. So yeah, that's, like I said, that's launching tonight. That should be interesting to see.
Now, anyone hearing this, okay, somebody might think, you know, the scientific method, you take 100 people, you think that guy would get 10 GMs. I know four of these GMs. I know their styles or whatever. This guy, you've put together an interesting cast because they all think differently. You have, I don't want to open that can of worms talking about age, gender, all that kind of thing. No, but I'm telling you, like, these six do count as 10, at least, because you've got, well, you've got some respective names and you have some out of the box thinkers. I don't know why you've got Michael in there, but, you know, sure, give the guy a break. No, just kidding. Hi, Mike. Love you, buddy. hopefully you won't watch this. I try to hit him up for this next interview. Start at six. And if the show takes off, I'm hoping that you'll have other DMs that have their own reputation, you know, come out of the woodwork and tag comments. That, you know, like, how great would it be? You put these six up there, you get your episode one. And then in the comments, you have other GMs going, I'm going to have a look at this game. Or, you know, I did play this, or I'm interested, you know what I mean? And then it starts that avalanche effect. So,
absolutely.
I can't stress enough, guys, like, don't just watch the video. Look at the follow-up for guys' videos on this kind of thing, like the comments and type of thing, you know, especially like from the other companies and things that are all going to plug and go, oh, yeah, oh, no, okay, you know, and be honest about it. Sorry.
No, you're quite
right.
I like
the idea. I just really like this idea.
Yeah, and what I was particularly impressed with was when I was speaking with the publishers, because these were big publishers that I was talking to, Cubicle 7, Modiphius, Chaosium. You know, these guys have been producing quality RPGs for a long time. What was really positive was that they were saying, okay, cool, well, we like the idea because we get the feedback as well. And so we can look at stuff and we can change stuff and adapt and learn. And so I think I would love it to be a two-way street where we're going, okay, this is the RPG that's just landed. This is what we liked about it. This is what we didn't like about it. If they did this, it could improve. And then for the publishers to go, okay, cool. Well, let's listen to that. Let's see what that's like. Let's think about that. Can we do that to get an improvement? Is it something that makes sense for our systems? But at the same time, for viewers to be able to watch it and go, you know, that GM liked it, that GM didn't, that GM liked it. I like those two GMs' playing style, so it will probably fit with me better. So then I will buy it. So yeah, it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, that's what I meant by like the six or 10. You know, like I said, you've got some names in there. And I hope it grows. I hope I hope the DM banner flocks to that, because that is something, that's an idea that really helps the community. Man, like, you just kind of went up. That is awesome. Okay, we're getting off track here. I just always love talking to these guys. Number one, that's only two. Come on.
It's
you promised
me.
You promised me. What was the third one? I'll try to get too excited.
The third one is kind of similar to what you were actually talking about with the Indiana Castle, although not nearly on the same scale. When I was at Gen Con, one of the things that I was looking at was I was saying Gen Con is all about the experience. And for us, 2019, it was an experience of how many publishers can we meet in the space of a day? And the actual answer is three. If you try for more, you're just not going to, you're going to run out of time. We've got that I don't want to say out of the way, but we've got that done now. So 2020 is about actually going and having fun. And one of the things that I was looking at was I was saying, okay, well, you go there for role playing and there's lots of role playing going on. I want to go there for role playing, but to bring something which I have, which not a lot of other people have. I mean, there definitely are a lot of content creators out there, but there's not a huge amount of content creators. So I want to up the role-playing experience. So this is still very much in the early stages, but I've got sponsors that I want to lean on and say, okay, Gen Con 2020, we're going to run three games, because that's the number of days that I feel it could work for, where it's going to be like the ultimate role-playing experience. So it'll only be for 18 people or maybe even less than that who sign up, buy a ticket to this event. But they're getting rule books, they're getting dice, they're getting all of the stuff that we promote and talk about on our channel. I want to be able to put into one bundle. So you come to this is going to be the ultimate role-playing moment, where you walk away with it, with character sheets, with maps, with the module, with dice trays, with books, with whatever I can get sponsors to donate or to donate or to give or sell. Whatever.
Ultimate swag bag of
yeah, and to hopefully build friendships and things with the people that you're playing with. Because for me, I always enjoy going to conventions and playing with different people. Even if it's a bad experience, it's like, oh my goodness, that person was terrible. That person might have been terrible because our personalities didn't match or whatever. But it makes me appreciate the people that I do like far more. So even a bad experience for me is a good experience. But I want people to have a great experience where they can walk away and they can have their mini and they can have their bag of stuff. And so that a year later, they roll a die and they suddenly realize, oh my goodness, that's the die I got when I was playing at this table with these people and having a blast.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's the stories you tell about the street cred that you got with the story and the merch and the, you know, and a lot of people take that as like a big promo thing. And it's like, no, you're not getting it. You know, like the around the table experience that drew us all in. Yes, there's a commercial level. You can't deny that. But for someone like yourself, just to like buy a ticket, Mr. Stranger, I love this game so much. I'm going to give you my experience for, you know, like that is cool. I got to say, that is really, really cool. I love the way you think, man. Speaking of merchandise, where do you have merchandise? Where can fans buy merchandise? Where can you find it? Could you send me a shirt or two? I'll wear them proudly. Like, now, what have we got online that we can peruse? I love your logo. Actually, it's a little backwards. Nothing but tech. I made the mistake of updating OBS last night, and it's just caused me nothing but problems this entire interview.
Yes, so we have a Teespring account, which is linked to our YouTube channel. I'll send you the link for that as well.
Yes, please.
Merchandise is always a risk. And this is something that we've learned and still learn to this day, is that you think it's cool, you think it's awesome, you make these things, and then nothing happens. People go, oh, those are cool, but I'm not going to buy them. Or I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to do that. And it's always very humbling. And I like that. It's about saying, hey, yeah, you think you're a big YouTuber in the role-playing space, but actually, you don't have all of the answers. You don't know what people really want in this space or in that space. Go do your homework. Or this is not your area of expertise. Leave it up to other people. And it always makes me smile. And I always go, yep. We got ahead of ourselves. We got too big for our boots, and we need to come back. So there is a store, Teespring. I have ordered from them. That's something that we make sure we do before we release anything to the public, is we always test it ourselves. So people who send me stuff to promote, I say, you send me a sample. If I don't like it, I ain't promoting it. Bottom line, I don't care how much you offer to pay, you know, for an endorsement. Yeah, yeah. So with Teespring, we have some t-shirts there and some tote bags and that kind of stuff. And I'm happy to say that when they arrived, the quality was very good for the price. So
they've recently, we use Teespring as well, and they have a, hey, by the way, if you'd like to order a sample of your own thing, which was never before, a quick, just because you actually happen to use the same one that we do, is and I don't mind talking turkey. I hope you don't. Okay. In America, Teespring, you get on there. It's a great site. I spent days designing and putting things up and just playing, going, yeah, making a t-shirt. I didn't care if anyone bought one. And it's like, and then you get to the finished product. They want their $12. Well, they're making your shirt. Sure you do. Okay. They recommend you take your $11.99. Okay. Oh, look, there's a whole list of charities you could donate as much as you want to. Okay. I picked MS and on goes. And then there's shipping. Ooh. That's another 10, 11 bucks, especially if you're shipping across the border, even the American-Canadian border, which is supposed to be friendly. You know, who's going to pay 50 bucks for a nobody shirt? No, I wouldn't. So for us, we took our profit margin down to like $5, a dollar. Like, just, we just want, you know, to get stuff out there, right? We got one fan, bought three shirts. That's where we're sitting at. And I've got lines for every show. And I just love designing this stuff and coming up with funny things and putting it on the shirt. Like you said, very humbling. But like yourself, I would back Teespring because it's simple. It's easy. They take their cut. You can adjust your cut. And there's donations to a charity. And they have a lot of, you know, feedback type of thing. You can put anything on a shirt. And there's a lot more than just Teespring out there. It's not as complicated. And there's like, there's apps and tie-ins to Twitch now with a Teespring, like with a t-shirt thing and this kind of thing. Merchandise, you know, and the merchandising where the real money from the movie is made, right? I love Spaceballs. But sorry, I had to go off on that one because I had my own Teespring experience. And like you said, it's very humbling to watch no one, you know, the first line we did, I was promoting a show that we hadn't even launched yet. It happened to be the Mummy's Mask one again. And I wasn't paying attention to the pricing. And I looked at the final price and posted it. And it's like, that's a lot. What did I do wrong? What? And then, their cut, my cut, the shipping. It's just a triple whammy of 10 to 15 bucks a pot. And it's like, no one's going to pay 60 bucks for this shirt. But I spent 3 days making this line. I don't want to take it down. So you've got merchandise. So now I've got a Kickstarter link coming from you that we got to share with the public, a Teespring link from you, the next gen con you're going to. You've checked the three boxes. So now we have to get schmoozy and personal. I'm going to ask some optional questions that you do not have to answer, just between you and me. But I find that people really find interesting, not just where you come from. You know, we played the race card. We played the background card. We played the he's not British, he's South African, get over it card. What do you do for a living? Doctors, lawyers, ditch diggers. I've met them all and talked to them all personally. Obviously, booksellers, librarians. You know, everyone plays this game, but no one came out about it until the Harry Potters in the 90s going, oh, well, actually, I am a geek, too. I, you know, really, that's interesting, doctor. Can you just keep, I know the aesthetics wore it off, but can you just keep going on me here? And I like Harry Potter, you know, that kind of thing. Before you got into this, has it supplemented your income? That's not my question. My question is, like, you know, what was the trade that kept you fed while you really wanted to do this, like, you know, DM's in your blood, and now you're the content creator. What keeps you fed?
Well, I used to work in television as a producer and as a scriptwriter and as a director, and I used to lecture film and television at university, because working in film and television in South Africa didn't pay the bills, so you usually had a double job anyway. So I used to lecture and work in television, and that was the mode of operation right up until I got into Japan and had a very educational experience with Japanese culture and work life ethic. And yeah, so a year and a half ago now, it was in June last year, I just went full time on the channel. And said, right, that's it. That's my day job now. My day job is YouTube. And that allowed us to release the first book, Complete Guide to Epic Campaigns, and to start on this journey. And the trade-off was that I would say that was the riskiest maneuver I have done as a career choice, because my salary wasn't even halved. It was quartered. As much as the channel is successful, the financial return is not huge. It's not retirement sort of level income. Hmm. But I took that risk. My partner here in Japan, we spent many months where it was like, okay, can we borrow money from family members to pay rent? And we had to for multiple months, as a matter of fact. Our running gag is called Next Month, because that's what we were living on. Oh, next month we'll have money. Next month we'll do a bit better. Next month, you know.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I'm glad you shared that with us, because somebody that there's a lot of I met two people in my store. Now, I'm a greengrocer by trade, and because the store's unionized, I make better than your average part-time wage, right? And there's union benefits and having kids, the dental, everything. It's a hard job to leave, but that's a 40-hour work week, and then I'm spending like all my free time, you know, sacrificing family and a bunch of time that my family's very understanding to do this. And like, if everyone's like, oh, I'm gonna be on YouTube and I'm gonna get famous and I'm gonna get paid, it's like, no, you remember that old saying, do what you love? You just want the regular 9-to-5 to go away, and you'd be happy just eating, you know, the fans and everybody supporting, doing what you love to do, and that there's the happiness. It's there's not the rich and the millions of the people and the going walking around like YouTube rock stars. That's not how most of us think. It's just I'd like the daytime 48 hours to go away, so I could put those 40 hours plus back into what I love doing, and just have it pay for it itself. I can eat the channel, sustainable, happy content creator. And so many people, content creators that I've met, they're going, yeah, that's exactly the formula. People really don't get how it's like. They see the 50,000 subs and they go, well, he's, and it's like, no, it's next month. Next month. So thank you for sharing with that, because that's, you know, that's how I think as well. But let's talk about the future, and I don't mean just the fact that technically you're 13 hours in the future from our timeline. Could you give us a taste, a teaser, or something that you got on the horizon that you know is there? It's the next big thing, and the next thing that you're gonna, you know, move towards. I mean, there's these goals. There's this thing, and you're going to go to Britain. And I'm telling you, the virtual wedding thing, that's a thing. You could do that. I'll help you with that if you want. But, you know, what's on the horizon for Guy? Let's have a look over there. And then you can't hold him to this, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, like this right. is just something he would like to do, inspire to do. And the guy's doing a crap ton. Like everything from cottage squatting D&D to moving around the world. The guy's busy, okay? So, but just let's dream a little bit here, Guy. What do you got? What are we looking at over there?
Just over there. well, with the move to the UK, I'm hoping to be able to do a live show from a central venue, as opposed to the shows that I do at the moment, where I'm pulling in people via the internet. That's great. That really is good. I would like to do something where we're actually in a space. I miss that. I used to have it in South Africa. I don't have it here in Japan. I'm hoping to get that once I get to the UK.
You mean like the Geisklanders Theater? Or are we talking like the Glass Cannon podcast take their money and they actually use it to go on tour and they have a single adventure path, Aeons, for Pathfinder. That's the only thing they play. And they go, this city, episode one. That city, episode two. This city, episode three. Well, that's crazy to follow them around, but they do eventually post it on YouTube or whatever. But that sort of traveling roadshow, like a band, is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about like... next to more that 7-Eleven like, that choked the town in Britain, you're going to be out there on the highway with a little booth. It's Guyland. Scalanderland, yeah? No? What are we going for here? Because
I would love to get to the point where it's a case of setting up a facility where people can come and role play. So you mentioned Michael Kesevin a lot. He's a good friend of mine. He runs a youth... He's part of a youth center where he runs role-playing games for people. For kids, it's after-school work. It's a good thing to do. I would like to get into that same space or into a space similar to that. But perhaps not just for kids, but for adults as well. Because a lot of my contemporaries, my same-aged friends, they look at me and they go, oh, you have so much fun. You have no responsibility. I'm like, sure, I have no retirement plan either. You don't see me smiling about that. But a lot of the times they forget about having fun. So ultimately, I would love to set up a retreat where people can come year-round. And it's not just role-playing. It's creative. So it's come here to this place and rediscover your childhood. Have crazy fun. So it might be role-playing. It might be creative writing. It might be LARPing. It could be a combination of those kinds of things. So that's something that I could really see as
will you let us play? Sorry, will you let us play with your He-Man action figures? Because I know you got them. Come and play with a Guy. Maybe he'll let you be Skeletor. Like, just reinvent the kid, right? Okay, maybe not.
We would have to talk.
that's the VIP. You know? If you bring a comparable many still in the plastic, maybe you can touch my stuff.
Then maybe we can talk. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I got to tease you. You just leave yourself so wide open.
No, absolutely. My biggest goal for 2020 is, one is top secret, so I can't talk about that just yet. But it's either going to be a great success or it's going to be a complete disaster. So it's on that level. While I'm attending that wedding in Africa in November, we're having a big strat session. And it sounds crazy. It's like there's two of us in the company. But we're having a big strategy session on how do we roll this new project out.
Are you hijacking his honeymoon? Like, first you don't show up for the wedding, and then they're alone, and then you show up. And like, okay, man, let's talk business. I'm here now. And the wife's like...
Well, it is a 20-hour flight, so I feel that it's 40 hours of my day that's gone. So he should at least give me 40 hours before his wedding.
I want to documentary that. I want to fly and be the guy with the camera following you. I'm with Guy Scalanders now, and we're getting off the plane. And there's, you know, we're walking across the parking lot at the Ritz, and it's like, no, we think they're in the penthouse. Let's, you know, knock on the door, and, you know, that guy goes in, and, but, oh, wow. I want to see that.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. But I've got another book already in my head that I want to release with the Kickstarter. We have already reached our funding goal, which is super exciting because it means hopefully that when we release another book, we can get that same goal. Because the goal is literally to pay for artwork and layout, which on the first book I did and took a really long time. because it is a labor-intensive process, by being able to say, okay, cool, well, we can actually afford to bring in other experts who are experts in their field, so the quality is even higher, we can now release more books because I have all of these ideas. Again, you know, it's almost 30 years of role-playing where it's, oh, remember we had this system and we had this, now we can actually release it and make it public. So, yeah, 2020 is going to be an exciting year in terms of Gen Con 2020, new books coming out, this super secret thing, which is, like I said, either going to be successful or not. There's a part of me going, this could split the role-playing community. Or, as is often the case, nobody even recognizes its existence, and all of the panic and the whatever is for nothing. But yeah, it's going to be a good year, I think.
Awesome. I want to be the first to know. is there like a back, you know, just want to sit in these meetings. You know, I still want that photo of you streaking with Scotty and everything. So what's going on? Maybe I'll find him online and just say, you don't know me, but I know Michael and Guy. See how this works? You know, the name dropping. Yeah. It does get me interesting. People is like, would you mind just telling the story? And he's like, you know, I don't know who you are, Jeff, but I got out this story about Guy, and maybe I'll get him on the show. And so you best just to fess up and show us the picture now. I'm just saying. But I've been speaking with Guy Scalanders. Sir, you've been an absolute treat. You've been putting up with me the entire time. So that street cred right there, anybody that suffers me. And I'd love to have you back in 2021 where we can discuss these successes, bumps in the road, and what's on the horizon again for Guy. Thank you so much, and we'll see you all next time on Attack of Opportunity. Say goodnight, Mr. Sklanders.
Good night, Mr. Sklanders.